I've today left hospital after a week in which the NHS has saved my life. No question.
That was British Prime Minister Boris Johnson following his life-threatening run-in with COVID-19. While Johnson was in London's St Thomas's ICU, our Europe correspondent Bevan Shields was 10 minutes down the road waging his own battle with coronavirus. He joins me today to speak about what he's described as the worst illness he's ever had. From the newsrooms of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, this is Please Explain. I'm Tori Maguire and it is Thursday, April 16. For the duration of the COVID-19 crisis, Please Explain is coming to you 5 days a week. As of this afternoon, Australia has recorded 6,462 cases of coronavirus and 63 people have died. Welcome back to Please Explain, Bevan.
Thanks, Tori.
The last time we spoke on this podcast, we were discussing the fact that Boris Johnson had been diagnosed with COVID-19 and how shocking that was for the people of Britain and for the rest of the world. Boris Johnson has been through quite a lot since that discussion, and it turns out so have you, Bevan. A couple of weeks ago, you woke up with a sore throat and it all went horribly downhill from there. Can you tell me about it?
It did. I've been covering coronavirus since February here and never really thought or had any cause for concern about my own health. But I woke up a couple of weeks ago. I had a sore throat. I felt really tired. And initially I thought, oh, I'm just tired. That's fine. But within a couple of days, things kind of escalated quickly, as they say. And I lost my sense of taste and smell. My body felt like it had been smashed by baseball bats. And then a fever set in, which was just absolutely horrendous. I hope I never experience anything like it again. The telltale cough also kicked in, and then I did have some difficulty breathing. So all of these symptoms lasted for 10 days and were quite relentless, and it's been a pretty awful fortnight, to be honest with you.
Are you starting to feel better now?
I am. The ambulance came to my house on last Saturday because the symptoms would not go away and the National Health Service thought I should be checked out. I had a chat with paramedics who basically said, look, you know, you're unwell. We can absolutely take you to hospital. Just so you know, FYI, the hospital's basically pretty ugly, and there's probably limited amount of treatment that they can offer you there. So I decided to stay home, and that was a good call in the end, because within a couple of days I did start to feel better, and it was almost as if the virus kind of gave up on me. And I say gave up on me because at various times during the week it really did feel like it was trying to kill me, it was a relief to have that feeling where it sort of packed in and gave up, and I've been feeling better since.
Watching all of this unfold from this end, Bevan, was very strange, because the Australian health system is coping exceptionally well with what has turned out to be, at this point, not a huge outbreak of coronavirus. And it was clear to me early on that someone as sick as you should have been in hospital and should have been on probably a drip and on oxygen, but that was just not an option. The NHS is world famous as a health system, but it really is being tested in ways it's never been tested before at the moment, isn't it?
It is. And the government does like to say that its capacity has not been reached. And that is true. But that's really only been achieved in large part because so many people who probably should be in hospital are basically being told, can you please stay home and ride it out? And had coronavirus not existed and I had the same symptoms, whether I was here in London or back in Australia, I would have taken myself to hospital, you know, at the very start of it. I felt so bad, but they're doing everything they can to reduce the number of people going to hospital. And I understand that. But my worry is that, you know, the advice makes sense on paper, but it does sort of almost feel a little mean when you're so horribly sick. And I just really do worry that there will be a lot of people who are trying to do the right thing, trying to heed the warnings about protecting the health service and staying home, but staying home and leaving it too late.
I know this is a difficult question to answer, but what was this like for you, Bevan?
It was the worst I've ever felt. I've never been so sick. I usually play things down when I'm sick and try to carry on working and as if things are normal, but this was something very different. I've never felt so sick before. And it's a strange feeling knowing that something is really, really attacking you. It's not also a nice feeling when you're here by yourself. And I had lots of support from colleagues and family and friends back in Australia and also here in London. But ultimately, it's really up to you. You're in it by yourself. I had one particularly awful night where I really did worry a great deal, where I got up and had a horrible fever all night, and I went and had a shower and got dressed in the bathroom, but I was so short of breath and so sick that I basically slumped to the floor and was gasping for air, and I couldn't stand back up, and at the end of a half an hour on the tiles, I had to crawl back on my hands and knees back to the bedroom and literally climb into bed. And that was a genuinely scary moment. And again, I'm lucky, I'm fine, I'm out of it, but I just really do feel for people who get this and are in a less fortunate position with their health than I am.
Bevan, your terrible story really illustrates the pressure that the United Kingdom is under. At the same time, you were gravely ill. Boris Johnson was in hospital around the corner from your house in intensive care, never on a respirator. He made a quite moving video when he got out of hospital talking about the NHS as the sort of jewel in the crown of Britain and famous the world over.
We're making progress in this national battle because the British public formed a human shield around this country's greatest national asset, our National Health Service. We understood and we decided that if together we could keep our NHS safe, if we could stop our NHS from being overwhelmed, then we could not be beaten. And this country would rise together and overcome this challenge as we have overcome so many challenges in the past. It is thanks to that courage, that devotion, that duty, and that love that our NHS has been unbeatable.
But I don't know, it doesn't look like it's held up that well, to be honest, given how sick you were and the fact that you couldn't get treatment.
It's under pressure in the same way that the health system in Spain and Italy and other places is. And I do wonder whether as good as the Australian system is, if it was swamped with the same pressure, whether it would hold up. There is a really big debate here at the moment about whether the government has stuffed up the response to all of this. There are thousands of people dying in care homes across the country who aren't being included in the tallies, and testing is a major problem. You actually can't get tested here unless you're admitted to hospital, and even then the tests are being rationed. So in Germany, where you have millions of tests being conducted, here the government has a goal of lifting the number of tests a day to 100,000, but that's still weeks off. And testing really is important, because testing means that you are able to keep the number of hospital admissions lower than they otherwise would be. You're able to isolate people with the virus and prevent them from transmitting it to other people, keeping pressure off the health system and buying time for hospitals to prepare. And I think when there's a big deep dive into how Britain responded to this, it won't stack up well around its testing regime. I think they've really stuffed it up on that.
You haven't even been tested, have you?
No, I haven't. So the only way I know this is that I would have had it is because I've just never experienced anything like this before in my life. I've had flu before. It was nothing like the flu. In fact, I think those early comparisons to the flu when we started to learn about coronavirus, did a really big disservice to public health. It's nothing like the flu. So the only way I'm going to know for certain is to be able to do an antibody test, but that is still weeks, if not months away as well. So there's that, the uncertainty is not great, but there's a little doubt in my mind about what it was.
How are Britons responding to Boris Johnson's recovery and his message after his recovery? Is sympathy going to get him through, or are people starting to get angry about the response?
People are starting to get angry, but it's not directed at him personally. In fact, I think people miss him. You don't realise until he's out of action how much he is the government here. There are lots of other ministers who've stepped in, but you know they're not Boris. People have missed Boris. There's an enormous reserve of goodwill towards him. It could have gone either way for him if he had to go on a ventilator, which was from what we understand, you know, very close thing. So for the time being, people are sympathetic towards him. And there is, I sense, almost a strange ignorance is possibly a strong word, but I'll use it, to just how bad the situation is here. People have possibly been a bit distracted by what happened to Boris. There's an increasing focus on the economic costs of the lockdowns to an extent where I think people have forgotten that, you know, thousands of people are dying, 900,000 people a day in some cases are dying here. And there's little focus on whether that actually could have been prevented. We saw those numbers in Italy, but Italy had zero time to prepare for what hit them. The UK had plenty of time to prepare, but we've still seen the same numbers. I think, as I say, once the dust settles, there'll be a few people who've made decisions here that won't look particularly good by the end of it.
What is the state in places like Italy now? Are they recovering?
Yeah, we've heard this term flatten the curve so much, and that is exactly what they're doing. Both Italy and Spain have flattened the curve. The number of deaths are coming down, but also importantly, the number of people that are pouring into the hospitals and intensive care units have really dropped significantly. But the debate here now is about what next? How do we get out of this thing? Do we get out of this thing? What happens if we ease lockdowns too quickly or in a way that prompts a second or third wave? And that's the debate that's happening right now. And until we actually have a good sense of how many people, you know, like me, have had this thing but stayed out of hospital, it's going to be very hard to know the vulnerability of the community once the lockdowns are eased and social distancing is relaxed. But for the time being, Italy and Spain, the worst is over, and that's a huge relief because the numbers there were really diabolical. And just to swing back to what I was saying about the UK, unless the UK can start to bend the curve over the next week or so, its numbers are actually going to rival Italy at some point, which is pretty remarkable when you think, you know, the plight of Italy shocked the world, and now suddenly the UK is tracking really disturbingly quite close to that.
Mm. So, Bevan, what's next for you? Not straight back to work, I hope.
Soon, I hope. I'm kind of bored, and, you know, there's this big story happening around me and I want to get back to it, but I'm still have a cough and I'm still not feeling 100%, so I'll take it easy, but I do hope to get back to work soon because I'm over it and want to have a bit more purpose again.
Are you allowed out of the house?
No, not until all the symptoms have stopped, and I've still got a cough and I'm still a tiny bit short of breath every now and then. So until all that goes away, I just really don't want anyone to go through what I went through. So if that means staying at home for longer than is probably needed, I'm happy to do that.
Well, Bevan, we were all very worried and we're all very pleased that you have started to make a recovery. You make sure you look after yourself and we will check back in with you once you are allowed out of your house again.
Thank you. And it is, you know, I just have to say it has been a wonderful reminder for me of how lucky I am. You know, I've got a great, I work for great newspapers, great employers. I've got great colleagues and friends and family. So there are some silver linings out of this. And that's, you know, how wonderful people have been.
Today's episode of Please Explain was produced by David Escort and Amelia Maguire. The journalists, editors, photographers, producers and tech team at The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald are working tirelessly at the moment to cover the COVID-19 crisis factually, fairly and comprehensively. For coverage you can trust, visit our websites or buy our papers. To support our journalism, you can subscribe via our homepages or just search Subscribe, The Sydney Morning Herald or The Age. I'm Tori Maguire. Thanks for listening.